check this out. This is Fresh Get Out the China Man with the 2 Live Crew.
Yo, yo, what's up, y'all? It's me, DMC.
What's up, y'all? This is the boy, Master P.
Yo, check us out. Chuck the Public Enemy.
Yo, what's up? This is DJ Yella from the world's most dangerous group.
What's up? This is DLC.
This is Jerry Heller, motherfucker.
It's your boy DJ Paul KOL 365.
Young Dizzy Ball.
Vice One.
Yo, this is DJ Reddy Red.
What up, what up, what up? This is the real Rick Ross. You listen to me on the Murder Master Music Show.
What's up now, motherfucker?
This is the show that shows no limits, broadcast nothing but the real. Interviews with legendary artists, still got love for the underground feel. Rappers with records revealing the nature of rappers that are coming up here to put on. We needed a platform to fight the mainstream. The show that you need to be on. Hit up UGS for life on the screen and follow with Wizards.com. For all of your needs, production and mixing and mastering, graphics and shadow and all. Check out the archives and hundreds of shows. Plenty of content to view it is. Everything free to download and stream. Oh yeah, we deserve the real.
We got
the gold,
we brought our bits, we represent. All them chillers on the mic and we show love to all your fans. Motherfuckers wanna hate, do your thing, keep the focus. Bringing nothing but the reason, come and tune into the dopest.
I'm a man-made guy, crazy knocking all you rappers off. It's underground society, it's beauty, it's some light dog. Hip-hop AD, represent for them legends. Rapping mumble rappers, so we ain't sitting on the hips. Tupac and B, dreaming, thank you for the bliss. This is a murder man.
This is Murder Master Music Show, UGS Radio, live. I'm Mike Ladd, rapping.
Hi, Mike Ladd. It's Murder Master Music Show on UGS Radio.
Alright, what's good?
Tell us about in your history, your roots into hip hop in Boston, and how it was to grow up over there.
Ah, man, that's a long story. I'll try and tell it real short. I was born before hip hop. That's sort of the kind of most important thing, is that I definitely remember life before in hip hop and after hip hop, because it was different. Like, you know, one day we were listening to Diana Ross singing Upside Down, You Turn to Me, Round and Round, you know, and bam, you know, Sugar Hill Gang came out, and that really, it changed, it felt like it changed overnight. You know, it didn't, obviously, but it felt like within a year, kids had put out, you know, linoleum or cardboard boxes on the street, and would break in on the street and had boom boxes and the whole nine yards. And it really felt like it was overnight. So it kind of started there. And so I was, you know, I was 10 when that kicked off, 10 and 11. So I had already really started listening to music. And for me, I kind of discovered hip-hop and punk rock at the exact same time. And so the two of those, and also I was in a town where you could, like, there were a lot of skaters and shit like that. Because I was in Cambridge, which is part of Boston, where there's, like, a lot of academics. It was a, kind of an easier cultural scenario than a lot of Boston, where it can be really polarized. And so you could, you know, you had ska kids, you had reggae kids, you had hip-hop kids, you had punk rock kids. And most of us listened to all those different musics together, you know, and house, a little bit of house. Like, that's funny, like, though, I got introduced to house by a punk rock kid, like Chicago house. And I still had that first vinyl. But then house kind of got kicked to the side because, you know, it just wasn't competing with hip-hop in the same way. That's in a place as conservative as Boston was. That's where it started. So, like, I've talked about this before. Like, probably my first memories is freestyling on the way to elementary school. When we were, like, 11 years old, you know. And my friend Troy came up with the best rap back then. This is 1981. And he was like, when I was a boy, I read the comics. Then I gave my money to Reaganomics. Now I'm dirt poor. I live in a shack. So please, Mr. Reagan, won't you give my money back? And then it went on and on and on. So, like, you know, that's kind of where it started. And, you know, I was always into so many different types of music that to say I was an aficionado of any would be fake. I'm not. But I just know what I lived. And I remember just, you know, I just remember hip-hop just really being like a storm that just showed up. And we were just in the middle of it. And that meant learning how to, you know, tag, and, you know, trying breakdancing in front of the mirror, you know, pop locking was big, beatboxing like Dougie Fresh. This was, you know, we're talking about a long time ago. And of course, DJing and rapping, you know, I had a little realistic. I had two turntables. You know, just whatever the accessories were, we sort of got them together. You know, the tools, not the accessories, actually. That's an important point, you know. I wasn't really into, like, you know, necessarily dressing a certain way. Or I just wanted the tools. I wanted to know how to do all these elements before anyone had even declared there were, you know, the four elements of hip-hop or whatever. The five elements. Yeah. And, but that's where it started.
Do you remember the first track in hip hop you heard in your life?
Yeah, well, it was, you Chicago? Know.
Chicago?
Yeah, it was Chicago Gang. Yeah. And then the first one I memorized was The Message.
Yeah.
And my brother's doing fast, so my mother's TV, kids watch too much, just not healthy. All my people on the Deshaun in Dallas at night can't even see the game or the Sugar Ray fight. The bill collectors that ring my phone scare my wife when I'm not home. Got a bump education, double digit inflation, can take the train, you know, all that.
Thanks, Daniel. You want to be raps.
Yeah.
Like Dr. Dre is a real Dr. Dre.
It was before that. No, I mean, this was like before MTV. This is when MTV was scared to put black people on TV.
Yeah.
Michael Jackson had to change that shit. You know, I mean, you know, that's how you gotta remember. It was like everything was fought for, and everything was a struggle. MTV was scared to put black people on.
Yeah.
They thought they were gonna lose fans.
I heard about that. Yes.
Yeah. And it wasn't until Michael Jackson was just unstoppable, you know. And now we dominate. As we were dominating before, since everyone was scared.
You live in New York too. You live in New York too.
I lived in New York for. Yeah. 17 years? 92 until 2004.
Yeah.
And I lived in Harlem, Brooklyn, and the Bronx. I enjoyed the Bronx the most.
Mm-hmm.
So we moved up there in like 96. Pretty much we were just following this one engineer, his friend of ours, who ran a place called TME Studios, the Midnight Eye. They're still rolling. Fred Ones is a graph artist and a producer and a DJ.
You got the Bronx Indicator.
Yeah, and so
Dan O'D.
Well, he so Fred was from the Bronx, and then when he found a place in the building where his dad was, and he was the one with the studio. He was the one with the Yamaha U2R. So we all followed him to be near the studio so we could make records easily. And that's where I made Welcome to the After Future. That's where I made the first Infesticons records.
You made a mix in your style into spoken word and hip hop. And who was your inspiration? It was Rob Brown or Jessica Theron or Les Poets?
No, honestly, it just sort of came. The reason I was, if I had a poetic inspiration, it was probably Ishmael Reed. When I was young, it was Langston Hughes, meaning like 11. So all this stuff popped up at the same time, between 10 and 11. This interest in punk rock, this interest in hip-hop, and poetry is all sparked at the same time. But I didn't really... I was rapping, so then in high school, I was a drummer in a punk band. Very bad one. Bassist. Then I ended up sort of rapping in this funk band we had, where we were trying to be funkadelic and not Red Hot Chili Peppers. I was like 86 to 88. And then when I got to college, we started this hip-hop band. And I already knew then that I wanted to do... I was already doing sort of left-wing shit. I used to, you know, this was 1988. I used to take White Rabbit, you know, Jefferson Airplane, and then freestyle over that and just sort of rap over that. So I was already... interested in doing stuff that was off time, and back then, you know, aside from like Divine Styler, things were pretty straight ahead, you know. So there wasn't much room, especially in Boston, which is pretty conservative at that time, in terms of what hip hop was and what it wasn't. The only place where I could really do sort of experimental lyrics was in the spoken word scene, and that's how I ended up finding that scene. I never wanted to be a spoken word artist. I like being a poet on page. And I like being an MC, and for me, it's just a personal thing to keep those two separate. But I fell into the spoken word scene because that was the only venue where there was sort of open ears at that point in Boston. And then that led me to New York. And of course, yeah, like I listened to H-Rap Brown and the Last Poet Salah, Jalal's, you know, I mean, the Hustler Convention, Jalal, you know, Rest in Power, who just passed last week.
Okay.
You know, Hustler's Convention, I used to love that, you know. I didn't necessarily want to do something like it, but it's, you know, I obsessed over that record. You know, but I was always kind of looking for out stuff. I remember I have all these cassettes, like, just crazy cats, I wish I could remember them, who were just doing different stuff, like guys who preceded Paris and out of Houston had this crazy beat tape they made. When I found the Ghetto Vets record, that blew my mind, you know. You know, so after I found that, I sort of followed Ramel Z's trajectory, and you know, I found that record pretty much when it came out in the late 80s, you know.
You know, it's not also, also we talk about the DC Go-Go, Go-Go Music, Chuck Brown, Brian Sons, all that.
I got into Go-Go because I was into funk, I mean, because my grandmother lived in DC, so we go down to DC, and there was a time where it was everywhere, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, but the Dog Magazine, we do 10 pages of Go-Go Music.
Yeah, like Trouble Funk and all that.
Yeah, all them. No. It's very underrated,
passing
style.
Well, it's funny because you had guys like Chuck Brown who were really in between, you know, because like, he'd been a funk band before there was even go-go, even though I think he like sort of invented go-go. But then people really took it hard to, like, you know, you had to have the paint cans for drums and shit like that. And that was the stuff I really liked. I mean, I love Chuck Brown too, but I was, in my mind, Chuck Brown was almost more of a funk artist than jazz artist, even though he was the father of go-go.
Your first album, Easy Listening, for Armageddon, 97, for me, it's a gem, ahead of its time. It's a mix in the two, trip-hop, even psychedelic hip-hop, and it was very ahead of its time for me. I think about Blade Runner, about Battle World, Geeks and Sissies, crazy tracks. How it was your mind to do it? For me, it's an album classics, like I had Mystic Stars of 26 Mafia, or some album who have heard this time back in the day.
Yeah,
can you tell us about this album?
Well, it was my first record, so yeah. You know, your first record is always sort of what you've been thinking about all your life. That's why usually people's first and second records are their best records, because they've been working on them their whole life, you know. And Welcome, Easy Listening for Armageddon, and Welcome to the After Future was kind of like, Welcome to the After Future was actually the outtakes from Easy Listening to Armageddon, but it was like, you know, it's kind of like I'd made a double album all my life. And there was some, you know, my primary interests were hallucinogenic drugs, politics, and sort of deep out funk that corresponded with my hallucinogenic drug taking, you know. And I wanted to make some sort of very black, yeah,
and
psych-
you produced
like
all the music.
Yeah.
You rap and you produce all the music.
Yeah, I produced all the music. Yeah.
What kind of equipment you have back the day for producing this album?
For both of them, I had an MPC 3000. And I had a Casio FZ1 sampler. And I'd link up, I just rocked the two. And then I had some outboard gear, like a nice Space Echo, Mutron Biphase. And then since the first record, I had a, thanks to a guy named Dennis Kelly, who was the engineer on the first record, I had an EMS AKS synthesizer, which is an old vintage synthesizer that he gave me because he had three. I didn't give it to him. He sold it to me for like $200. He really introduced me to analog synthesizers.
Oh,
so that's on the first, you know, from the first record on, it's always on my record.
And what kind of music you listened with making this album? Or?
Around that time, it was a pretty wide variety of music. There are a couple of things that were really important. trying to, God, I'm going to miss out what they were. I mean, there were some concrete things that I've been working with for a couple of years beforehand. Divine Styler has been a huge influence on me. I would say Pastanus's lyrics. I was always a big fan of Jungle Brothers. Those were sort of like the main hip-hop influences for that record. And then Sonny Chirac's record, Ask the Ages, had been a big influence. Some people I ended up sampling on that record, like Moondog. And then Bollywood music. Like, I lived in India.
Yeah,
in high school.
The cover is crazy.
Yeah.
What was the anxiety for the cover?
Well, I went to high school in India for a year in 1986-87. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was always just looking for the most out music I could find. And riding on a bus in India while you have Bollywood blaring through one mono broken speaker where, like, the woofers cracked, it was like one of the most punk rock experiences I ever had. And I was like, this shit is ridiculous. This is awesome. It's had the screeching sound. You know, yeah. And then the bass is sort of broke, coming through our track like that. So that was a big influence. Production-wise, I would say things like... what was I going for production-wise? Some weird mix between, like, Paul McCartney's Ram and Bad Brains, just in terms of, like, this general sound I was looking for. I remember being obsessed with how Paul McCartney mixed records, but I'd grown up so much with cassette tapes that I also just loved noise, you know?
Yeah, oh yes.
That's the background noise with cassette tapes.
It's drum and bass sometimes, a mix with trip hop, like a Tricky or Air Sling, Radar?
Well, that was the
album Radar.
Like Tricky came out right when I was making that record.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to be Tricky, you know. But I was kind of like, oh man, he got to like some concepts that I was going for before I did, you know. And then what else came out around then? Beck also came out around then, which I definitely wasn't trying to be Beck, but he also was touching on some similar concepts. You know, everyone sort of comes up with the same ideas around the same time because of whatever's floating around.
At the same time, you had also Keep Off the Funk, of the Underground. You know that type of sound of Mike?
Well, being in New York and being with Freddie, who was
jazz,
deeply
and
from the...
hip-hop and,
the thing that saved both records, saved my early records, and that I miss about living there, was Freddie, really, from everyone's from TME, and then, like, he's just sort of... So I'd have these really sort of psychedelic out ideas, but then I'd always ground them with my friends from the Bronx, who were, like, real purists, who tolerated me just because we were friends. But they sort of always brought it in a little bit. We're like, nah, man, you know, you can't do that. Yes, you got to have some sort of rules and regulations. And so they always sort of grounded those records. So, you know, and for me, it's always had to have a nice backbeat. And my thing is I always loved it lo-fi.
Yeah, I think at the time, it's sometimes atmospheric.
Yeah.
It reminds me sometimes, you talk about the noise of the tapes of the early Memphis sound,
DJ
sound or 36 old school shit.
Well, that was another thing.
DJ Screw, I think,
DJ Screw was
a
huge influence.
You listen to him back the day, at this time?
Yeah. I've actually been like sort of doing a return to DJ Screw.
Yeah.
Because he's like the father of everything that's happening. I mean, the last 10 years, DJ Screw is responsible for it, in terms of hip-hop, in my opinion.
Very underrated
producer. But you heard that Solange, someone chopped and screwed the last Solange record?
Yeah, I heard about it.
It's fantastic. It's the best way to hear that record. But, DJ Screw, and then also, you know, the other thing that was the biggest influence that I was trying and miserably failed at was to try and do a Charles Stepney type production. Mm-hmm. And Charles Stepney was a producer for a whole lot of records on Chess. He did, you know, he's the mastermind behind the Rotary Connection, behind Minnie Riperton's first records. He did, in my opinion, the Dells' best records. He produced a bunch of Ramsey Lewis. And he always just worked with a lot of reverb and just sick drummers that no matter how much reverb put out, you know, he'd get it in the pocket. Anyway.
And did you understand at this time, Isham or Nadas, you know, Detroit? It was acid rap. It was a mix with
I missed it. I didn't really catch that until later.
Oh, yeah.
At the time, I'd missed it. I didn't know what was happening. I didn't know that was happening. I heard about it later, obviously, and I was like, damn. I wish I'd known about it then.
Yeah, and sometimes in music, I think about Banner Herman also, mm-hmm. like a Taxi Drivers of the Tam, and also about repetitive music. I don't know if you listen to Lamontion, you know, all that Steve Reich and Kevin Barrias, all the style.
Steve Reich, I listened to pretty heavy, you know, even in Stockhausen as well. I remember being obsessed with the Helicopter Suite. And, you know, there was always. I had a modern music influence too, just from the radio and what my mom would. My mom sort of listened to this crazy mix of reggae, modern music, classical music, out jazz, and then R&B, but like very specific people like Roberta Flack, George McRae, a lot of Nina Simone touring in our. I mean, the principal records that turned in my house growing up was Bob Marley Live. Anything by Jimmy Cliff, don't ask me why. This is all my mom's playlist. Classical music every morning. Keith Jarrett's Cologne Concert. George McRae, Rock Your Baby. Anything by Nina Simone. And anything by Roberta Flack. And that's especially feeling like Making Love in First Take. Like, that's what my mom played. It was that mix of people. And that had a big influence on me. And then, of course, she had this huge record collection, and I would just I then made my own playlist out of that as I got older.
I just want to talk about repetitive music, because they created sample before the hip hop,
right?
Back in the 60s. Crazy. Can you tell us about your album Welcome to the After Future in 2000, and the track with the Company Flow, Blade Runners? By the day.
Well, that track came about just because me and LP had the same manager, and so we ended up being friends. And the manager's Amiche Uzungwe, who's still L's manager, and he now manages Run the Jewels. And me and L really got along. I ended up living at his apartment for a while in Brooklyn, and he had heard, we were both big Philip K. Dick fans. And he ended up claiming that even more than I did. Like, we met, and then he was like, all right, I'm going to be the Philip K. Dick fan. Mm-hmm. And, but we bonded on that, and bonded on our love for the film Blade Runner. So much so that we did, like, a, you know, a remake of the version that was on the first record, but with him and Big Juss.
Mm-hmm. You did also with the Majesticons back the day, two things. Can you tell us about these projects too, on the Majesticons?
Yeah, well, the Infesticons and Majesticons came about because Ninja Tune called me up, or Big Dada, Will Ashton, who was the head of it, because they had already been talking to Amici. They'd done something with Saul Williams, and they wanted to do more stuff with another artist that Amici was
Mr. Lean, we got.
Yeah, well,
Pop Consortium.
Right. That all came after.
Okay.
So, I mean, it went in the order of, I think Will was trying to reach out to Saul, got to me, and then I made those records, and then that led to Antipop being there, mm-hmm. and Mr.
Saul Williams too.
Yeah. No, but I think Saul was the first. Like, Will got in touch with Saul because he wanted to do something with Crust or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then he heard me and he wanted to do something, so we ended up doing a whole record together and we really got along. I'm still friends with Will. And then it grew from there. Then they did Antipop, and there was just a real alliance for a minute between Will Ashton and Amiche Uzungwe. But I wanted to do a side project because I was obsessed with how George Clinton could do Funkadelic and Parliament. Mm-hmm. And it almost felt like two totally different genres. So I wanted to do something like that, and something that didn't have to do with my persona entirely, which I love those records, and I love I love all my early shit. It's just weird because it then all of a sudden got me on this very obscure trajectory.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was already making obscure music, and then to make obscure music, but then to further obscure myself with different labels.
Mm.
It's like, just strategically, n'importe quoi, you know, like strategically, whatever.
I think about the album Nostalgia Tour. I have one track for me. It's crazy. It's how electricity really works, and for me the production and how what you say into it is crazy. So can you tell us about this track and how it was your mind for the production and all that?
Well, I wrote the poem years before.
It's so deep, so deep.
Thank you. It's a poem. I was doing a whole series of poems where it was sort of conversations with, I mean, I wrote the poem in like 93, because between 93 and 94 I did this series of poems about where I'd sort of take an Orisha god, a goddess, and put them in conversation with one of the American founding fathers, and was trying to make, you know, sort of more genuine American history, which meant much more mythology, which meant an Africanized American mythology. So I'd done this series of poems, and that one I liked in particular and kind of helped me get into graduate school. And then, so I used it, we made the music for it when we did Nostalgia Later. And Nostalgia Later is, I'm trying to remember how it goes with it, like what was on it, because there was a lot of instrumentation. At the time, I'd been touring with Jaleel Bunton, who ended up being the drummer for TV on the Radio, and this cat, Damali Young, who lives in Sweden now, and that was the band. And so it was the first time I really started exchanging ideas intensely with other artists in terms of what a record would sound like. And I can't remember exactly how that came about. I was still working on the MPC 3000. And then there was a lot more EMS synthy playing in that song.
It was very hypnotic, very oniric, you know, style. Yeah. Can you tell us about the Father Divine
record?
Father Divine, yeah.
Oh, that record was commissioned by Thirsty Ear, and it was me and this cat Guillermo Brown, who's an amazing drummer. And he was already, I'd known Guillermo for years. He'd actually been my drummer for a minute before Damali. And he's just a great guy. And he was working with the guys at Thirsty Ear on something else, and he heard I was doing a record. He's like, oh, I want to be on a... So he and I started working together, and he really helped propel a lot of the ideas. And there's actually a whole section of that record that got cut because of the guy who runs Thirsty Ear wanted more of what I was doing, but Guillermo had this amazing work behind it. Guillermo's now like, he's a drummer with Jerry Watts.
Mm-hmm.
He's on Jerry Watts' band. And you know, he's got his own band called Pegasus Warning, and he was also in the band that I rap in now called Thieves. But anyway, so I was already living in France. It was the first record I made in Paris.
Okay.
It was sort of back and forth. I've never made a record just in Paris. I made part of it in New York, but I would go to Brooklyn, stay with him. We'd sort of come up with ideas, and then eventually, what I did is, I ended up putting everything back into the MP. I'd done two recording sessions, 2 days with Andrew Lamb, Vijay Iyer. You know.
You did Hold It Down with him.
Yeah, we'd already.
Do project too.
Yeah. Song. Yeah. And what do we do? The first one was, the first collaboration with me and Vijay was In What Language. Then we did Still Life with Commentator, and then we did Holding It Down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got also with Zone Libre.
Yeah.
Some years ago. How it was the experience to make a song with them?
Well, I love Sergio. Sergio's one of my favorite people to hang out with in Paris. And he's just got, he's very clear as to what he wants and what he feels will work. And so it was cool to work with someone like that. And I learned a lot from him just in terms of someone who's, you know, reached a certain level in a certain country and then and learned how to just master his lifestyle around that too. Like Sergio's learned how to really enjoy himself and enjoy his music all at once and to continue to push boundaries in ways that excites him. And he sort of got the funds to make that happen, you know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he's not rich. He just sort of, maybe he is, but I don't know. You wouldn't be able to tell. But he's comfortable enough to just continue to experiment the way he wants. And mm-hmm. it's not, he doesn't throw away the privilege that he got with Le Noir Désir, you know. I would say that's what I really like about him. Like, he hasn't wasted that privilege.
Yeah.
He's taken it preciously and used it to kind of push things in interesting ways. And then, of course, Cyril Bibeau and Marc Nemour, awesome guys to work with. I mean, going on tour with them was always great. Mm.
You got also a game with Jeff Bucker.
Yep. That record was crazy. Just because I was supposed to, I really liked that record, and it didn't really do... didn't make the type of noise that I was hoping it would make. Partly that's because Rogue Art isn't really interested in promoting a record at all. They just like to put it out. Would have, you know. And I knew that going into it. But the way we did that was I was actually trying to write. I had like 5 days to sort of organize and write some stuff for it. But my dad got sick. And I got a call. I was in a movie theater, and I get this call. It's like I was in America, and I get this call from my sister. Says, "Yo, Dad's in the hospital in Rome." And I was like, "Holy shit!" Like, and he's gonna die. That was the issue. And so I had to pull like this middle class James Bond maneuver and buy a ticket to Rome that night. To like, you know, I got off the phone and. Less than 12 hours later, I was in Rome at the hospital. So, and then I had to take care of my mom and all this other stuff. And so by the time I had come back to make the record, I'd had no prep time. So all I did was, it was me, Tyshawn, High Priest, and Jeff Barker. Tyshawn, sorry, he's like a genius. And so I just showed him a little clip from Pootie Tang, where Pootie Tang's making a track, and he just turns off everything. You know, because I was making, you know, explaining how I wanted to make, you know, be as minimal as possible during the improvisation. And so then we did three recordings, each 50 minutes of just improvisation. And I didn't know what we had when we finished. I was like, oh shit. And then I just cut like the best of those 50 minutes. I didn't edit it in any other way except just make it fade in and fade out. And I did that with Scotty Hart. And that's how the record came out. I like it because it's 100% improvised.
Okay. Can you tell us about your project with Arad Kilo and Vision of Seta and the group, how you met him and how it was for touring with him?
I met them because the bassist Samuel called me up to do a guest on their previous record, and you know, I do a lot of guesting to feed my family. Somebody calls me and the music isn't atrocious, I'll say yes. You know, I've done a lot of guesting where I don't necessarily love the music, but I need the fucking money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like I don't make music for Coca-Cola. I don't make music for Lockheed Martin. So that means I will take a lot of guest jobs where I don't necessarily agree with the, you know, I don't 100% agree with the music. I always agree with it to at least 75 to 80%, or else I wouldn't be able to do it. But there, I really like the music, and Mamani Keita had already laid down her part. And so it just flowed real quick, and it was just nice and easy. I was in and out of that studio within 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I like working like that. And Samuel paid on time, So that relationship started off very well, and then it turned into what we got now, which is, you know, a collaboration that seems to be working pretty well in France.
Yeah. You got tracks like Don Kula or Sids. Sids is very hip-hop on this one. The only single track in hip-hop music. Can you tell us about this one, Sids?
Oh, it's just about, you know, how drug money, you know, sort of keeps world economies going. That's facts that everybody knows now, you know, that I thought it was my own theory when I wrote the song, but then, you know, of course, everyone else agrees with it, that, you know, the whole reason why the 2008 crisis wasn't even worse was because the amount of drug money floating around.
Mm.
You know, and then the fact that the CIA has been using drug money forever, one, to keep the economy, well, one, to keep people oppressed, and two, to keep the economy going. So that's what that's about.
Because the NAFCOT also, just instrumental music, NAFCOT.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's dope too. Also, Soul Flood.
Yeah.
Can I tell about this one, Soul Flood?
It was a freestyle I did at a radio show.
Yeah.
Okay. And so all the spoken word in there is freestyle. I don't write down spoken word. I'll write poetry down, and I work on that's meant for the page. I'll write hip-hop down, which for me is poetry in a certain type of form. Mm. But when it comes to spoken word, the type of shit that people snap their fingers about, I make that shit up on the spot. I don't have time to write that shit down.
And if you have three best albums in hip-hop, like
for me?
Yeah.
My personal three? Hold on. I mean, I gotta probably get my car. The easy, quick answer. Well, one, Paid in Full is definitely in there. As in terms of complete albums, hold on. So yeah, what did I say? Paid in Full. I don't know. People are gonna hate me for saying it, but I say Done by the Forces of Nature. I love that record. That influenced me a lot. And for me, too, just the song, not the whole record necessarily, but, you know, and I've said this 1,000 times, but Divine Style is Tongue in a Labyrinth, which is just a bass line and a fucking helicopter. That song blows my mind. I always love that song.
And three favorite rappers?
Favorite rappers? See, I got funny ones. I like MCs that rap like they talk. So, for example, I put it in two categories, right? So, you know, I put Rakim Nas and maybe Divine Style in one category. For me, that's my own thing. You know, I'm not getting in anybody's rap academy discussion. And then other MCs, and then I put Ghostface, Redman, and Vast Air in another category. I love those guys. Because Vast, he raps exactly like he talks. and so does Redman and then Ghostface.
Okay. Okay. Really thanks for the interview, Mike Ladd. It was a pleasure to have you.
Yes, it's all anytime, man.
Yes, sir.
All right.
On tarmac treadways to bottomless pits, a tongue of dolphin bobbing in and out, her energy, a babaloo I ain't, bone grinding fire, a feel bone, and jump flesh.
I smell a ghost in here, smell a dog in here, smell some morning sweat, I smell lust in here, I smell a ghost in here, smell a dog in here, I smell morning sweat, I smell lust in here.
Dancing new to chicken feathers, moisture makes it better. Lip balm's mustache, she can laugh, I know it tickles. Streetlights make a carousel around me and she goes deeper. There is the kneading of spine muscles, a pipeline hustle to the better half of a bitter brain. Breath falls on nape of neck, he rushes like liquor loaded Mardi Gras holidays. She begins to sway, the street turns to jelly.
Smell a ghost in here, smell a dog in here, smell warm on sweat, I smell rust.
Oh,
forehead to forehead, giving lips distance for 3 seconds. So we suck in jungle gyms and alphabet lessons. She breathes, I can't speak. We keep groping, hoping stenching. Streets will disappear, but if she can't hear, then we can't smell neither. And so goes the fever on its course, like freight trains and rolling boulders, rocket ships and crane lifts, marching soldiers into tunnels, and a million other images like geysers and funnels. We keep rolling just the way the smell is going. Genuflect, caresses come correct, and suddenly we reflect our last time, despite the mind, and you go for yours, and I for mine. We walk alone on tarmac treadways to a simple home. I've got yellow brick road syndrome. I'm solo on my sojourn, but mouth, tongue, and lips still wet all inside me. There is no forget, regret, or upset, just the sweat that we leave on this street, and something burns like fall.
Smell it.
How electricity really works. The buildings are made of lightning. Benjamin Franklin in eternal shock. Kite with key in hand after all these years. He is the ghost atop these towers, jumping from peak to peak like Jack Frost or Sandman. Fairy-like from a distance, haggard and shell-shocked up close. His skin sags like muddy bags of rocks hauled from a mine. His clothes tattered and singed. He glows from radiation. It has been so many years. Oblivious to praise in his honor, his chateau in history is vacant, bored with paintings by Danes of make-believe Negroes at ambivalent feet. He discarded letters and chess for fire from clouds, delving in the games of gods, basking in new decadence beyond women in Paris and the death of Indians. Something supernatural, the harnessing of energy. Electricity Man. Sky crack, circuit surfer illuminating home by home at the speed. Philly, New York, beyond, bringing to life toys and boys' bedrooms. A Tinkerbell from hell, a Rumpel's his knickers still smoking. In wasted glee, he keeps us well lit, alive with syphilis caught from power. His eyes swirl like peppermints gone wrong. This deist, defrocker of Jesus, now frocked in Orisha robes, a sucker for Ishu, Ogla of Ogun, jockeying for position with these gods, stuck in second with Santa Claus. Demigod limbo aspirations kept him alive all these years. General Electric is a loan shark, its hounds and sunglasses wait in Pontiacs to catch Ben, jumping light to light in their line of fire. Old Glow, they call him. Con Ed can't find him, not even by satellite. They take our money with the ambivalence of vacuums. And we pay, hoping for a glimmer. We drop checks in mail slots like teeth beneath pillows. Dance a little, smile, and praise the crackhead running our appliance. Old Glow got us humming, rubbing raw the carpet, clinging together, ravaged by static, searching for the kite, grabbing at the key.
For more pills, pop standard and poor. Let the doubt hit the floor. That's what the dope is for. Pop some pills for that doubt to get some. Let it blow up some more. Meet your maker, then get it again, son. He's not the only one with the guns and Cali acres. You moving papers, I said congratulations. You're a taker, like the 1% in reverse. 1% got you slaving yet again. Clergy versus pagan, who's playing for them? Organic breeds down in the Cayman.
I got them seeds like the street, got them seeds like the downy, them seeds, so we push up. I got them seeds like the state need disease, so the world won't disease, so we push up. I got these seeds like the street, got these seeds like the downy disease, so we push up. I got these seeds like the state need disease, that the world won't disease, so we push up.
Zodiac. Cessna, cool passing it forever.